The United States is buying another half billion doses of Pfizer to donate to low and middle income countries around the world.
Slow vaccine distribution. It's Monday, October 4th. This is VOA Asia. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. Find us at VOA Asia Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube. Also ahead, built-in phone censorship. Taliban seek China's help. Asia's green growing alternatives. Real-time climate data. Bringing the past to life. It's all on today's VOA Asia. The United States is the global leader in vaccine donations, pledging to send 1.1 billion doses to help the world fight the COVID-19 pandemic. But it has shipped only 15% of the doses it has promised. From the White House, Patsy Whitaker-Swara explains.
For every shot given domestically, the United States will send three shots abroad. That's the pledge President Joe Biden made to help vaccinate the world.
The United States is buying another half billion doses of Pfizer to donate to low and middle income countries around the world. This is another half billion doses that will all be shipped by this time next year. And it brings our total commitment of donated vaccines to over 1.1 billion vaccines to be donated.
Of the 1.1 billion doses the U.S. has promised, the State Department said about 172 million have been shipped, or about 15%. The White House said 200 million more doses will go out by the end of 2021, and the remaining 800 million will be sent out by September 2022.
The claim about being the arsenal of vaccines for the world, I think, is a great talking point. It would be great to see put into action, but that can't just be about donation pledges. So I do think when we talk about access and supply of vaccines, we have to look at the overall picture of who's actually getting access.
Humanitarian organizations say 80% of administered doses have gone to rich countries and less than 1% to low-income countries. Data from analytics company Airfinity on vaccine stock in the U.S., European Union, United Kingdom, Canada, and China, countries with the biggest surplus, show an excess of 670 million doses by the end of September, even after those countries offered booster shots to everyone older than 12.
You now have a situation where you have rich countries that have three times as many doses as they actually need. And there's a real risk there that, one, it's leaving out much of the world, and two, we may not be able to use that full supply. We're already seeing rich countries essentially waste millions and millions of doses because they expire before they can be used.
Advocates say the U.S. should be ramping up shipments of donations now and do more to transfer vaccine technology.
President Biden could use his powers to force companies like Pfizer and Moderna to share their technology and know-how with the global platforms that have been created to do that. The World Health Organization has created an mRNA technology transfer hub in South Africa. Pfizer and Moderna have not participated. They have not offered up their technology to those hubs.
Airfinity data show vaccine manufacturers produce 1.5 billion doses per month. With more than 6 billion doses already administered globally, the WHO goal of getting the remaining 5 billion doses required to vaccinate the world's population could be achieved in months, as long as wealthy nations can loosen their grip on global supply. Patsy Whitaker-Swara, VOA News at the White House.
Join us online to find out more about this and all the stories you hear on VOA Asia. You'll find us at Twitter, Facebook, and our website, voanews.com. These are among some of the top Asia headlines you'll find right now when you visit voanews.com. North Korea accuses UN Security Council of double standards over missile test. Thai Parliament debates police reform amid latest scandal. UN seeks investigation into killing of Rohingya rights defender. Hong Kong trade union disbands as impact of security law deepens. In media reports, Philippines Duterte says daughter running for president. You'll find expanded coverage of these stories and much more on Facebook at VOA Asia, Instagram, Twitter, and the voanews.com website. I'm Jim Stevenson in Washington. There's much more coming your way on VOA Asia. Right now, a popular Chinese-made phone has a built-in censorship tool that can blacklist search terms on the web. That's according to research by the Lithuanian government. The country is urging owners of the phones to replace them, as we hear more from Henry Ridgewell.
The Lithuanian Ministry of Defense analyzed three popular Chinese-made phones currently sold in Europe. One made by Xiaomi, one by Huawei, and another by OnePlus. They reported finding a censorship tool built in to the Xiaomi Mi 10T 5G phone, which can block certain search terms, including Voice of America.
We clearly saw that all those keywords are politically motivated. That terms such as, Tibet, Taiwan, democracy, U.S., and some companies like yours are mentioned in that list.
Xiaomi is the most popular smartphone brand in Europe. Researchers say although the blacklist function was turned off on the Xiaomi phone sold in Europe, it can be activated remotely. The list of blocked search terms appears to be continually updated, with 449 words or phrases on the blacklist at the time of the research.
If we compare the list which is currently and with the list which we analyzed a couple of months ago when we conducted that research, we see the differences. There are much more words now on the list, and we are adding not only now in Chinese, we are also adding words in Latin.
German security services have also begun a technical examination of the Xiaomi phone. Xiaomi did not respond to VOA requests for comment. The firm said this week it was engaging an independent expert to assess the findings. The Lithuanian researchers found the Huawei P40 5G model collected users' data, including how long they spent using the apps, and stored it on servers outside the European Union, beyond the jurisdiction of the EU's data laws. The analysts say Huawei's official app store, called App Gallery, directed users to apps containing malware. In a statement, Huawei told VOA, Huawei has always adhered to the principle of integrity, abided by the laws and regulations of the countries and regions where it operates. Huawei makes it clear that these apps are from publicly available sources, so the user isn't forced to download an app. Lithuania has told government workers to get rid of the Xiaomi and Huawei phones.
On the basis of national security, really, we are looking for ways to protect our state institutions working in national security, and give them a chance to only work with trusted suppliers. When it comes to consumers, we are giving recommendations. So, of course, to really, avoid using cloud services, avoid using some applications, Chinese-made applications.
China has yet to comment on the report. Many Western countries, including the United States, have blocked Huawei from involvement in the rollout of 5G mobile networks, fearing that it poses a security risk.
I think this research is in an illustration that we should go beyond that discussion in telecommunications sector, that we should think about other sectors.
The report comes against a backdrop of tense relations between Lithuania and China. Both countries have withdrawn their ambassadors after Taiwan and Lithuania agreed to open diplomatic offices in each other's capitals. China claims Taiwan as its own territory. Beijing has halted rail freight to Lithuania and suspended trading licenses for Lithuanian producers. The United States this month reiterated its support for Lithuania in the face of what Washington called economic coercion by China. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
Happening now in Asia, amid deadlocked denuclearization talks with the United States, North Korea fired a newly developed anti-aircraft missile late last week. It was the second known missile test within a week. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. It's a brand new week. It's great to have you with us today on VOA Asia. After the Taliban seized power in Afghanistan, the international community stopped funding government agencies. The Taliban now is appealing to China for assistance, and that has some regional experts worried. Shahnaz Nafees has the story.
The Taliban, who took power in Afghanistan by force last month, is facing a financial crisis. With its foreign reserves frozen, international aid ended, the Taliban is looking to China for assistance.
Certainly, they can gain economic assistance and financial aid from China if Afghanistan collaborates and complies with some of the projects that the Chinese have suggested. The downside is that the Chinese will expect greater control and influence over Afghanistan's decision-making, especially regarding insurgents or activists who spread out of Afghanistan and could infiltrate in China.
China is already trying to strengthen its influence in the region. Pakistan recently announced it had held talks with the Taliban to include Afghanistan in the multi-billion dollar China-Pakistan Economic Corridor, or CPEC, which includes a series of infrastructure projects as a part of China's Belt and Road Initiative, aimed at expanding China's political and economic influence to Europe.
China's hope is that by expanding its CPEC projects into Afghanistan, it can help stabilize the economy in Afghanistan and perhaps reduce the political instability that has caused trouble for China, especially in its western provinces.
China is also interested in Afghanistan's rich natural resources, according to experts, and if the Taliban can give that, China will be interested.
That could open up opportunities here for the extraction of minerals. That would be of some strategic value to China.
Afghanistan is thought to have untapped mineral and metal resources worth more than $1 trillion. Shahnaz Nafees, VOA News, Washington.
There's much more on this story on VOA Asia social media.
After you listen to VOA Asia, you can see VOA Asia. VOA Asia is on YouTube. See and share the fun with Food Bites, our weekly culinary dive into foods from the homeland. Recipes that came with chefs who immigrated to the United States. Students enrolling in U.S. schools can get their first lessons about life on campus. Subscribe for free. See us often at VOA Asia YouTube.
This news from VOA Asia. Japan's coronavirus state of emergency has ended in 19 prefectures, including Tokyo. Infection cases have plunged from their peak, as around 70% of the nation has received the first vaccine dose. You'll find this in all the big stories through the day on VOA Asia Twitter and Facebook. This is VOA Asia. VOA Asia continues. Growing food has become an increasingly innovative art, with people finding new ways to use existing spaces and items to cultivate sustenance. The business of food in Asia is explored in today's VOA Asia Business Scene with Chris Cascao.
A mass graveyard for Bangkok's flamboyantly colored cabs left idle and decaying by coronavirus curbs is coming to life with mini vegetable gardens and frog ponds set up to help feed out-of-work drivers. In an open-air parking lot in the west of the Thai capital, green shoots fed by monsoon rains sprout from the roofs and bonnets of row upon row of pink and orange taxis. Tiny green-brown frogs squat croaking in the tropical heat on makeshift ponds fashioned out of old tires, tucked in among the 200 or so abandoned cars. The site is owned by Ratchaprak Taxi Garage, which has seen most of its drivers quit Bangkok for their home villages because fares have dried up following lockdown restrictions. Tapakorn Asalawortkun is one of the owners of the taxi graveyard.
This is our last option. We need to grow vegetables on these taxis. Some of these taxis still have around 700,000 to 800,000 baht of unpaid car loans first borrowed back between 2019 and 2020.
Thailand imposed tough restrictions to deal with a deadly spike in COVID cases in recent months, including a nighttime curfew. Tourists, normally a mainstay of the Bangkok taxi trade, have dwindled to almost none because of the extremely strict rules on entering the kingdom. In an industrial unit on the outskirts of Taipei, chefs are plating meals that will never be served in a restaurant. Welcome to the world of ghost kitchens. Even before the pandemic sent an earthquake through the global restaurant trade, the Amazonification of commercial kitchens was well underway. But coronavirus lockdowns and restrictions have fueled explosive growth in Asia. The recent boom in food delivery apps meant customers were already used to having restaurant-quality meals quickly delivered to their homes. To meet that demand, a growing number of restaurants set up delivery-only kitchens, also known as cloud kitchens, or rented space in ones. Then the pandemic struck, ending dining out for billions. Jason Chen is the chief executive officer of Just Kitchen.
The pandemic certainly has propelled the growth.
Regional delivery giants like Singapore-based Grab and Indonesia's Gojek have also jumped on the trend. Grab opened 20 new cloud kitchens in Southeast Asia last year, up from 42 before the pandemic. The global ghost kitchen industry is expected to grow more than 12% each year to be worth some 139.37 billion by 2028, according to a report by researchandmarkets.com. For many in the region's densely populated cities, where living space is at a premium, eating daily from cheap restaurants or food stalls is more affordable and viable than cooking at home. For Business Scene, I'm Chris Cascajo.
Making headlines in Asia, during an Armed Forces Day ceremony, South Korean President Moon Jae-in said he would repel any attempt to threaten the country. He also emphasized the need for peace on the peninsula. Stay up to date with VOA. You're listening to VOA Asia. Now on VOA Asia, a newly launched satellite gives researchers near real-time clues about climate conditions here on Earth. Plus a look at this week's spaceflight history and a slightly more affordable way to experience weightlessness. VOA's Arash Arabasadi brings us news from space.
NASA, in a partnership with the United States Geological Survey, launched its latest satellite. Named Landsat 9, it will join forces with Landsat 8, already in orbit, and together the two can image the entire planet in 8 days.
I think one area in particular that's going to see improvement is looking at water quality. For example, harmful algal blooms are a big issue in the U.S. and worldwide. With the improved data quality from the Landsat imagery and getting it every 8 days, we're going to be able to see the early detection of those algal blooms and their evolution much better than we could have before.
NASA's Jeff Masick describing images from Landsat 8 showing a massive algae spread in the Arabian Sea near the coast of Oman all the way to India. Scientists say a warming planet brings the microscopic creatures, one of the world's oldest life forms, from beneath the surface to the top, so much so they can be seen from space. Researchers say the Landsat technology allows for constant monitoring of how our planet is changing. In other news,
1988, America returns to manned spaceflight for the first time since the Space Shuttle Challenger disaster.
It was in 1988 that NASA launched the Space Shuttle Discovery. It was the space agency's first crewed flight since the 1986 Challenger disaster that killed 7 astronauts, including schoolteacher and contest winner Krista McAuliffe. Decades later, the International Space Station now orbits our planet, and private spaceflight has become a reality, albeit an expensive one.
Everybody down on the floor!
Until perhaps now. Our final story this week, Zero-G Corporation isn't exactly promising spaceflight, but rather the feeling of spaceflight. The company's CEO says flights aboard a custom Boeing 727 let passengers float, do somersaults, and weightless push-ups mid-flight. He says they've flown Stephen Hawking, Richard Branson, and Elon Musk on their plane. And far from the price of his suborbital competitors, a 90-minute trip costs just $7,500. Arash Arabasadi, VOA News.
This is Science in a Minute.
Around 66 million years ago, nearly three-quarters of the world's plant and animal species, including the dinosaurs, were eliminated by what scientists call the Cretaceous-Tertiary, or KT, extinction event. According to a new study from the United Kingdom's University of Bath, among those that survived the mass extinction were a few snake species. Not only did they make it through the KT event, but snakes also thrived and expanded into between the 3 to 4,000 species that live today. The study, published in the journal Nature Communications, suggests snakes were able to survive the mass extinction because they sheltered underground and were able to live without food for long periods. The study also proposes that snakes were able to move and adapt to new locations and habitats around the world by filling the voids opened by the disappearance of competitive and enemy creatures. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Geneticists, led by Harvard Medical School's George Church, are aiming to bring the woolly mammoth back to life by the year 2027. Some experts are not so sure this is a good idea. Think about some of the movies you may have seen, like Jurassic Park. Karina Berfrigian thaws out the details of this story, narrated by Anna Rice.
Bringing the woolly mammoth back to life and settling the animals in the Arctic tundra. That's the ambitious plan of American scientists from the company Colossal. The person behind this idea is George Church from Harvard Medical School. Together with researchers and scientists, Church aims to use woolly mammoth DNA to make a hybridized Asian elephant that could thrive in Arctic climates. But not everyone feels as optimistic.
You're not necessarily recreating mammoths, but rather you're creating hairier elephants or adding in traits that were once of the mammoths into an elephant.
Getting the woolly mammoth's DNA has been relatively easy, say experts. Paleontologist Tori Herridge says relatively well-preserved remains of mammoths were discovered in Siberia.
But in terms of extinct animals, it is some of the best preserved ancient DNA that we have. So there, because of the fact that Siberia, one of the really special things about Siberia, and you know the Yukon in Canada and Alaska, is it has these deposits called permafrost.
Some scientists hope that woolly mammoths will be able to bring back to life the tundra meadowland and that way protect the soil from erosion. But the bigger question is, can genetically modified mammoths adapt to today's world?
Ecosystems change and change pretty rapidly and have been changing even more rapidly in recent decades in the last century as a result of humans' influence on the planet. I think it's going to be really hard. I worry it may actually be impossible to integrate successfully mammoths back into these ecosystems.
Russian scientist Sergei Zimov, together with his son Nikita, are working on turning the current northern ecosystems into meadowland. In Russia's Yakutia, they created the 20-square-kilometer ecosystem where large herbivores live peacefully. The place might just be the perfect spot for woolly mammoths.
So our task is to create meadowland where the mammoth would thrive. Right now, there's no meadowland in the Arctic. All of today's vegetation is not sufficient. Everything grows extremely slowly.
Zimov says George Church's plan to bring back the woolly mammoth won't happen quickly, even if he does succeed, saying it could take decades to establish the first woolly mammoth population. For Karina Bafrajan in Washington, Anna Rice, VOA News.
That's all the time we have for today's program. It comes back to life again tomorrow when you can join us for another edition of VOA Asia. In the meantime, you'll find us online. We're at Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Thanks for joining us and thanks to our team, Service Chief Diane Gao, Keith Lane, and Chris Cascao. I'm Jim Stevenson. We're in Washington. We hope you have a wonderful day ahead. Be safe. Be well.